one evening many years ago when I was still at school, the phone rang at home. My brother's running master telephoned. He had been summoned the next morning. They had both been summoned the next morning to the headmaster. And it was not going to be a pleasant experience. Basically, one afternoon, it was games, and they went for a cross-country run. And they went out to a place called Ashdown Forest, which is an enormous forest down in the south of England, in Kent or Sussex. And my brother claims to this day that his shoelace came undone. Okay, so he stopped, and when he looked up, there was no one to be seen. We actually really know that he was lagging a long way behind, and everyone else sort of ran off into the distance. But my brother thought nothing more of it. He staggered on, didn't know where the heck he was going, but just sort of carried on. Eventually found a road, tried to sort of stop the car, stop the traffic, but no one stopped for him, so he put on a limp. And eventually a lady stopped for him, and my brother, being ever resourceful, got in the car and got her to take him home, basically. What he didn't know was, this was obviously before the days of mobile telephones, was that the running master got a little bit worried that this 15-year-old schoolboy was nowhere to be seen in the middle of this enormous forest, so he raised the phone to the police, as you would do. And they had half of the Lewis police force out in the forest looking for my brother. And I guess I thought I'd just start off by saying, if you don't know the way, you can get yourself into real trouble. Okay, so we're coming to the end of our series tonight, the I Am series. And this evening, we're looking at Jesus' amazing claim, the last claim, I am the way, the truth, and the life. The setting for this passage is that Jesus knows that his crucifixion is near. He's predicted his death, and is now giving his disciples their final instructions. He's just washed their feet in a chapter or two beforehand. He's predicted that Judas is going to betray him, and he's predicted that Peter would deny any association with him. I think we can imagine that there was a lot of anxiety, a lot of nervousness and confusion within the disciples at this point. They were very concerned about what was going on, really didn't understand what was going to happen. And as we come to our passage this evening, we're going to look at three questions. First question is, why should we trust him? The second question is, how can we know him? And the last question is, what can we ask him? So, question number one is, or first point is, trust him. This evening I want to introduce you to a friend of mine. She's a lady. She helps me a lot. I trust in her completely. And I always do what she tells me to do. I've never seen her. I don't know what she looks like. But whenever I'm lost, I'm going to start laughing in a minute, she guides me. Now I guess some of you may be thinking, what on earth is this guy going on about? Should he really be standing at the front talking about a lady who he doesn't know who guides him? Well, her name is Gwen. Some of you may know her. It's not the Gwen that has moved down to Wales, it's another Gwen. And I asked her to talk to me earlier, and this is what she had to say, if you can hear this. The U-turn is what she normally tells me to do, but I don't argue with her, I just do it. So, we put our trust in many different people, don't we? Apparently, according to Moira, doctors are the most trusted profession. Don't know if you believe that. I guess I put my trust fairly often in a pilot who takes me up into the air and thankfully doesn't drop me out of the sky. We occasionally trust a salesman, not very often, but occasionally we'll trust a salesman and buy what they're trying to sell us. And sometimes these guys are trustworthy, and sometimes they are not trustworthy. And in verse 1, Jesus says, "Do not let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God. Trust also in me." Now, as I mentioned, the disciples were confused, frightened, concerned. They really were, didn't know what was coming to them. And Jesus knew that they would soon see him killed. And he also knew that they would face many trials themselves, and many of them, if not all of them, would also be killed. Now, he hadn't had as much time with his disciples as he would have liked. If we remember, there was times when he wanted to go away and be quiet with his disciples, but there were so many crowds that wanted to hear Jesus that he found that quite difficult. So I think he was, at this point, really trying to get in as much to his disciples as he possibly could. And for me, this is almost a plea when he's saying, trust me, please. I know you're confused and things are tough now, and they're about to get an awful lot tougher, but you must trust me. And I guess for us, we must be aware that we will face personal trials. Some of us are facing personal trials at the moment in the church. Some of us have faced many personal trials in the past. And I think Jesus' plea to us is for us to trust him. You must trust me. And I think it's important that we prepare ourselves in anticipation for tougher times that may be ahead. I've got a number of university friends who, when they're at university, they were really committed. They went to all the Christian unions and got involved in everything. But as soon as they left university and the close-knit community of a Christian union was taken away, they sort of wandered away from their faith and they no longer trusted in him. And I think the danger for us can be, sometimes we're in a good fellowship, is that we get sort of taken away with a feel-good factor, which is good. I'm not sort of saying it's wrong to have good fellowship, because we should do. But I think it's also very important that we spend time in our personal relationships with God, so that when things do get tough, our relationship is strong enough to take it. And I think we have to get that balance, but I think for this evening, I'd just like to sort of emphasize that we must focus on our personal relationship with God. So when you are in those dark moments and you don't feel you can talk to anyone else, then you can rely on God and trust in him. Opposite to that, I had a friend, his name was Tim Harris, and he died of cancer when he was 33. Tim was my dormitory officer when I became a Christian, and he was one of those guys who was a role model to me, you know, someone who you always looked up to and, you know, sort of not wanted to follow so much, but, you know, he was someone who everyone sort of looked up to. And at his funeral, the vicar, said to him, saw him a couple of days before he died, and the vicar said that Tim, although he obviously knew that the end was very near, was still praising God and thanking God for all that he'd done for him. And I can say that Tim had a very strong personal relationship with God, and he did trust in him. And I guess we should ask why we should trust in God. Well, verse 2 says that he has gone to the Father's house to prepare a place for us, and that is ultimately why we should trust in him. He's reminding us that although we face confusion, trials and pain on earth, the reward of heaven is worth putting our trust in him. The second point I want to look at tonight is, how can we know him? Now, Gwen is very helpful. I do trust her. Although sometimes I have to say she drives me round the bend. Sorry about that. But I can never get to know her. And Gwen doesn't claim to be anything other than someone who tells me where to go. And of course, Jesus' claim is a little bit more profound, isn't it? Thomas says, "We don't know where you're going, so how can we know the way?" And Philip says, "Lord, show us the Father. That's going to be enough for us." Basically, they're saying, we're confused, Lord, but just please take us to the Father directly. Don't keep confusing us. Just take us there and we're going to be happy. But Jesus tells them, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. I am the way, the truth, and the life. And the way describes a journey, doesn't it? If you're lost and you ask someone the way, you know that you haven't arrived at where you want to get to. On Friday evening, a lady knocked at our door looking for number 19. So we sort of looked high and low up and down the road, but we couldn't find number 19. Eventually, when I went out later, she parked sort of way over the other end of the estate type of thing. But, you know, if you don't know the way and you ask someone the way, then you haven't got there. You're still in the middle of a journey. And I think that's important for us to remember. We are in a journey. Jesus claims that he was the way to God, i.e. he is the journey. He is the way that we get to God by going with him. But I think if we look at this passage, we see that the claim is more than just that, although that is amazing within itself. Jesus said that he is the only way. No one gets to the Father except through him. He also said that he is in the Father, and the Father is in him. Verses 10 and 11. He says that the Father lives in him and works through him. He says that he is going back to the Father to prepare a place for us, and he is coming back to take us there. So although Jesus says he is the way, it's actually much more than that, if we really look at the passage. And it's absolutely fundamental to our faith that we understand that. Because many religions claim that theirs is the way, but there are no other religions that claim to effectively be the way in the way that Jesus was doing, that he is the only way. He is in the Father. He is God. That he's gone there to prepare a place for us and is coming back to take us there. And I heard it said that Jesus is the forerunner, escort, destination, and the way. He's the forerunner in as much as he was there with his disciples. He came to earth and he died on the cross. He is the escort in as much as he's coming back to us to take us there. He is the destination in that he is already there preparing a place for us. And he is the way in that it is the journey that we are on. And that's maybe a bit deep and mind-blowing for Sunday evening, but it is true and it is important. Jesus is the forerunner, the escort, the destination, and the way. John 14:6, the famous verse, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one gets to the Father except through me. It does not address the way in which Jesus brings people to the Father, but it does tell us that no one gets to the Father except through him. So we've all got different experiences as to how we got on our journey to be with him. All those experiences are very valid, whether it's you were brought up in a Christian family and you never knew that time of conversion, or you very clearly know the way that you turned, you know, went at the roundabout, turned left, and did your U-turn. And got on that road. But it doesn't tell us how he does it, but he does tell us that no one gets there except through him. And we live in a society where anything goes. And I remember when I was thinking and preparing for this, it was when I was at university, and we used to sort of have the Islamic Society into the Christian Union occasionally, and we used to go into the Islamic Society. And one of these Muslims came to us once, he said to me afterwards, that we would both go to heaven, it's just that we were getting there in different cars. He was in a Ford Sierra and I was in a Ford Escort, but we were both going to get there. Well, I don't know if that is actually what Islam teaches. I don't think it necessarily is, but I do know that's not what Christianity teaches. I also had an Italian colleague who, we were driving back from Wales one day, and for a couple of hours we were sort of comparing our beliefs, and it was a fascinating time. And in many areas, our beliefs were the same. But he just could not accept that Jesus was saying that he was the only way. Although he knew his Bible very well, he could not accept that. And the next day I just sort of emailed him, John 14, verse 6, and sort of say, well, explain to me this in a different way if that's not what it's saying. So we can know God through Jesus, and we're on a journey to get to our final destination. And I guess we could say loosely that the map that we're using is entitled Jesus. So finally, what can we ask him? Let's just read verses 12 to 14. I tell you the truth, anyone who has faith in me will do what I have been doing. He will do even greater things than these, because I am going to the Father, and I will do whatever you ask in my name, so the Son may bring glory to the Father. You may ask me for anything in my name, and I will do it. So, what has Jesus been doing? Basically, he says, doesn't he, that whatever he's been doing, those who have faith and believe in him will also be able to do, or he expects us to do. I think often people at this point think, well, Jesus has just been talking about miracles, and he expects that we will do great miracles. I don't actually know if that's what he's getting at there. I mean, I don't think we do miracles. I think God does miracles. Jesus did miracles for a purpose. I don't think there were miracles that Jesus did that were an end in themselves. You know, I don't think he went home and chatted to his mates about what he'd been doing, so say, oh, you won't believe what I did today. It was really cool. You know, there's a guy who was stone dead, and I sort of raised him up to life, and you should have seen everyone around. They were absolutely gobsmacked. I can't really remember what the guy's name was. It was Lazarus. But anyway, that didn't matter. But, you know, it was amazing what I could actually do. And I don't think that was the motivation. I think he probably would have gone home and spoken about Lazarus and why Lazarus was so important to him and why he'd done it and what he now wanted Lazarus to do, i.e. he would have been looking at the person and overall and ultimately the purpose of his miracles was love, because he wanted to share love with people. So what did Jesus do? Well, okay, he did miracles, but he loved people. And I think that if we read this, what it's saying is that what I want you to do is to love. And then, yeah, there can be miracles that come out of it and everything else. So if we have faith in him, we will love. Galatians 5 verse 6 says that the only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love. And the great thing is, as it says, if we ask in his name, which I think isn't just a verbal thing, it's not just a case of at the end of every prayer, as long as we say, in your name, Lord, it's when we reflect his character. What's his character? Well, his character is love. So when we're reflecting his love so that he can bring glory to God, he will do what we ask. And I think it's important with this in mind, if we're going to pray for the needy, pray for people who need our support, etc., but not actually offer to show practical love, then probably we're not actually asking his name, whatever we say at the end of the prayer, because it is in love that Jesus did the things, and therefore it's in love that we should be praying. And I guess that's why the Church Community and Change Project is so important, and the motivation behind it. It's not out there as an evangelistic thing, but it's out there because we want to look like, you know, have the character of Jesus, and the character of Jesus is love, and that's, you know, what he did. His sole purpose when he was meeting with people was to share love with them. And after that, they wanted to follow him. So we've covered a lot tonight in a very short space of time. Sorry if we've sort of covered too much, and quite honestly with that passage, you could look at it in completely different ways and focus on the truth and the life and everything else, but I just wanted to sort of take that angle on it tonight. But let's just sort of remind ourselves, we can trust in Jesus. We need to prepare for hard times so that when they do come, we can continue to trust in him. Jesus is the way to the Father. He is the forerunner. He's been here as the escort to take us back. He's the destination of where we're going to go to. And he is the way. He is the map. He is the journey that we are on. And we can ask anything in his name, but our motivation must be love. So to finish with tonight, I'd just like to ask when, what God will do when we get to the end of our journey. And it's very short, so you need to listen carefully.
We have reached your destination.
We've reached our destination.